Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Monday, June 15th, 2026. I'm your host, Magnus Teevels, and joining me in the studio today is...
Peter R.H.
And we've got a bunch of stuff lined up for you for today's show. The FIFA World Cup tournament started just last week with the first game happening in here in... here in Vancouver, the first Vancouver game happening on Saturday night. There's a community group looking to help prepare folks who are vulnerable during the tournament. And we're going to listen to a report from our own Jesse Wenceslaw about that. So that's coming up in a couple of minutes. After that, we have... if you get out into... out into the nice country around Vancouver or here in the province, you may already be familiar with a book called Coastal Plants of British Columbia or of the West Coast, which is a guide, sort of identification guide, which is kind of essential to have if you're out and about in the woods and whatnot. It's a complete guide to all the different plants, and if you see something interesting, you can find out what it is, all about it, learn more about it. And the group that's put that together 30 years ago is bringing out a brand new edition, and Pamela Hasen from Seekick Radio has a story on them and their new edition. We have, of course, Gardening with Embark coming up at about... 10:30, 10:35, and we're going to be talking about tomatoes today. Almost everybody grows tomatoes, so make sure you're listening in for that, for some great tips on getting the most from your tomatoes. Peter, what do you got coming up? About Trump.
Why don't we talk about three magazine cover articles, the Playboy 1990 cover article, the Vanity Fair cover article 1994, and the Rolling Stone cover article 2015, and sort of be a bit of a critique about why they were done and what were the consequences of these cover articles.
Yeah, Trump has been on the front pages for seemingly most of his life. It's not like we didn't know who he was, but we'll come back to that with your discussion at the end of the show.
Okay.
First up, Jesse Wenceslaw met with a group that is launching a program to reach out to vulnerable populations and support gender safety during the FIFA World Cup.
With hundreds of thousands of visitors arriving in Vancouver for the FIFA World Cup 2026, two community organizations are partnering to support gender safety and make sure it's included in ongoing conversations about public safety at one of the premier global sporting events.
Vancouver, of course, has spent a lot of energy around the public safety aspects and paying very close attention to security, policing, crowd control, and streets. But what is missing from the picture and what the research tells us is that we can expect increased gender-based violence during this time.
That's Angela Marie McDougall, the executive director of Battered Women's Support Services.
For the next 6 weeks, we, in collaboration, are taking action on gender-based violence, both in terms of the entertainment district and all of those public spaces, and then also what's happening in the home.
International research has identified increases in reports of intimate partner violence during some major sports events.
With World Cup, with other high-profile sporting events, we know that there can be between a 20 to 40% increase in intimate partner violence reports. Our intention is to lean on the research that our colleagues have done in other regions around World Cup, specifically in the UK, and also research that we've seen in Canada that is looking at Canadian football.
And while sport does not cause violence against women,
from our perspective, intimate partner violence is already at endemic and epidemic levels and is amplified when we see strong emotions about winning and losing, when we have increased alcohol use, and also the presence of gambling is another factor, and the losses that come sometimes, the financial losses and those impacts.
Heightened emotional intensity, alcohol consumption, gambling stress, nightlife activity, and other factors can intensify existing patterns of coercive control and abuse.
Everybody that we've talked to has a story about something that happened during a high-profile sporting event, whether it was while they were out or whether viewing at home.
Definitely larger crowds, more alcohol consumption, absolutely that increases the risk. That's why the City of Vancouver has funded these initiatives, and I'm still so thankful for that. So absolutely, it does.
That was Trina Notman, board chair of Good Night Out Vancouver.
If you don't know what Good Night Out is, we specialize in reducing sexual violence harm in events, nightlife, and hospitality situations.
Good Night Out Vancouver is launching a series of initiatives to support safer nightlife and public environments throughout the tournament, working directly in nightlife and hospitality settings to support safer venues, strengthen bystander awareness, provide community outreach, and help create safer experiences for residents, workers, and visitors.
Now, we are going to be adding another 21 outreach shifts as a part of this initiative, and we're going to be also present at all 28 days of the FIFA Fan Fest, and also present at the last mile spectator route for all 7 game days, which is really great. So you'll see our team out there in pink shirts and pink backpacks, doing everything from handing out water and sunscreen to helping people find their friends, to helping people navigate uncomfortable situations, to helping people connect to medical and other services as needed. Our job is really to help contribute to a really safe celebration for everybody.
Battered Women Support Services will also be expanding their crisis care hotline services for the duration of the tournament.
We are increasing our crisis line coverage during this time frame. We are going 24 hours during this time so that our crisis line will be available. As one of the largest anti-violence organizations that is specifically serving those that are experiencing intimate partner violence, we know that we will get calls.
The organization has also launched a practical resource to increase awareness of both safety information and the supports available to individuals experiencing violence, coercive control, stalking, harassment, or other forms of abuse. The FIFA Safety Card Initiative.
We're reaching out through a card that we've created specifically for outreach, and we're working with Good Night Out Vancouver to share the card. It's a version specifically for the next 6 weeks, and it has a list of criteria that sometimes people are asking if they're concerned about their safety that can be prompts to thinking about safety. And then, of course, the QR code, which will take the person to our website. And then the crisis line number, which is a call or text number. And we're very grateful to Good Night Out, who has agreed, in addition to the many wonderful resources that they're providing through their outreach, that the card will also be provided, with their outreach team will provide it as well.
While most safety planning for the World Cup has focused on concerns around crowd management, transportation, and tourism, BWSS and Good Night Out's efforts will highlight the importance and necessity of considering safety in homes, workplaces, nightlife venues, and community spaces, not just in stadiums and other public gatherings.
Together, in collaboration, we are working to address gender-based violence, both in terms of what happens outside in the public realm and what happens in the home. This is a key area of the public safety that we recognize is so important. We want to prevent violence, and we want to provide supports when violence occurs.
Finally, BWSS is launching a series of public service announcements to raise awareness about coercive control and the realities that many survivors experience behind closed doors.
We have a public safety announcement that will focus on coercive control, understanding those specific dynamics around coercive control. The Supreme Court of Canada just had a decision on a new tort of intimate partner violence, and that legislation looks at coercive control. It defines it very explicitly. These public service announcements are about awareness in terms of intimate partner violence generally, but coercive control specifically. Our intention is around intervention, but also prevention and awareness.
Together, Battered Women Support Services and Good Night Out Vancouver represent two critical components of a comprehensive safety response during FIFA World Cup 2026: prevention in public spaces and support behind closed doors.
What we really specialize in is sort of that early intervention and supports. So we're there to support people before things escalate. That's really what we're there to do. And it's really effective. It's really effective in making sure that things stay safe and people can celebrate.
It's so important to get support. I mean, part of what happens with abusive relationships is isolation and not having access to support. So the big part of what anybody that's providing services or that cares about somebody who's experiencing abuse should do is to help alleviate isolation. And that is to connect somebody to a support service.
Both organizations emphasize that meaningful public safety requires prevention, early intervention, survivor support, and community awareness working together. You can find more information about Battered Women's Support Services at bwss.org and more about Good Night Out Vancouver at goodnightoutvancouver.com. From Vancouver, for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff. This story is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and can be found online with other stories at frequencynews.ca. With hundreds of thousands of visitors arriving in Vancouver for the FIFA World Cup 2026...
And thanks to Jesse Wensloff for that report. The FIFA World Cup here in Vancouver, the Vancouver component of the tournament started on Saturday night with a game between Australia and Turkey. It seems like Whistler was completely emptied out of its Australians because they're all down here for the game. It was pretty exciting in the area around the stadium. About an hour before, or an hour and a half before the game started, an enormous parade of Turkish fans walked from about the SkyTrain station area through along Expo Boulevard and Quebec Street through to the stadium area with an enormous volume of singing and chanting. Thousands and thousands of fans were out. Both for the game itself, but also for the there's sort of a fan area over by Science World and throughout the downtown area. And so far, so good, according to the Vancouver Police and FIFA. Things went really smoothly. There were only two minor arrests and no real other incidents or problems reported. And hopefully, that is the way it is for the remainder of the tournament. But of course, it has statistics have shown that domestic violence incidents do go up during and around big games like the ones we see during FIFA. So it's great to see the Battered Women's Support Services and Good Night Out Vancouver working together to provide additional supports throughout the tournament. The Coastal Plants of British Columbia is a plant identification book that came out 30 years ago. It's an amazing, if you don't own a copy or you haven't seen a copy, it's an amazingly comprehensive guide to the plants you encounter all along the west coast of our area, from Alaska through to Washington State and Oregon. And if you don't own one, it's definitely, and you like to get out into the woods, it's definitely worth adding to what you stow in your backpack, so that when you see an interesting plant or something unusual or something you haven't seen before, just want to know what all these things are you're walking through, it is your best friend. The folks behind that guide are putting out a new edition, and we have a report on that from our friend Pamela Hasen from Smithers Radio.
This is CICK News.
In the ever-evolving field of botany, Plants of Coastal British Columbia stands as a monumental resource, poised to replace its predecessor that debuted over 30 years ago. Authored by renowned botanist Jim Pojar and his collaborators, this new guide not only updates the foundational knowledge of plant life in the region, but it also reflects the significant changes that have shaped our understanding of these vital ecosystems. As Jim told me in our interview on the picnic table in his beautiful backyard, the past three decades have seen substantial shifts in plant taxonomy, driven by advances in DNA barcoding and a heightened awareness of the impact of invasive species. This new guide aims to present up-to-the-date information on plant habitats, distributions, and conservation statuses, ensuring that readers are equipped with the latest insights into the flora of coastal British Columbia. With over 500 pages of detailed descriptions and stunning photographs, this guide is designed for a broad audience, from seasoned botanists to casual nature enthusiasts. Jim's commitment to educating others about the intricate relationships between plants and their environments shines throughout this work. As he notes, the most effective way to learn about plants is through exploration and plain curiosity, which makes this guide an essential tool for anyone eager to delve into the rich botanical tapestry of coastal British Columbia.
Okay, the new book that we've written is to replace the original Plants of Coastal British Columbia that came out over 30 years ago. And a lot has changed since then, so we wanted to update the information, also include more of the flowering plants, or the so-called vascular plants, the ones that have conducting tissue, and then because a new guide incorporating the taxonomic changes, the changes in names, the accumulated information about habitat and range, because that's been changing, the impact of introduced invasive species, because they've really come on in the last decades, and in some cases the status of the plants in a conservation sense, you know, whether they're secure or threatened or rare, rare and endangered, because that has been changing as well. And then sort of overarching everything is climate change, especially climate warming. And we tried to incorporate that into the book as much as possible. It's pointless to try and predict what's going to happen.
Right, yeah.
But it's already happening. Yeah. The impacts of resource use, in particular forestry, are everywhere in this coastal region. And so we discuss things like vanishing old growth, big treed old growth, and the industrialization of the forest landscape, converting huge areas that once were covered with forests that were, you know, 300 years old, and now being replaced by young forests that aren't allowed to get older than 70 years, because they're managed on a short rotation. So that's a massive change. Even though it's still a forested landscape, it's not the same sort of stuff. Well, another advantage to a new book, not just updating an old one, the photographs are so much better now. Yeah. But yeah, the photographs are fabulous. In fact, that's one of the, I would say, the big accomplishments of our work over the years in working with the Forest Service. I'm talking about Andy and I. We were able to clue a whole generation of foresters into plants and what they could tell them about the ecosystem, along with just foresters, there's the public.
Over three decades, this field guide has become an essential companion for naturalists, educators, and enthusiasts alike. Like Sibyl Huesler, a former professional forester and research scientist whose work addresses the dynamics and diversity of plant communities and ecosystems. I met Sibyl at her lovely home in Smithers to discuss her review, and the way that she's used the book as a naturalist and professional.
When the book came out, Plants of Coastal British Columbia...
1994.
And you wrote a review.
Yeah, I wrote a review. And, you know, I knew most of the authors, so it wasn't, like, independent. I don't remember if someone asked me or if I just thought, oh, I should write a review. I think that's the case. Uh-huh. We have a group, a botany group that goes places, and we went to Haida Gwaii. And the book had just come out. And so I just took this book on the trip. We all go and we botanize for 3 or 4 days. And so we were all over Haida Gwaii. And normally I would come with this whole suitcase full of all the old plant books that you needed to figure out what was out there. Let's go around here. Because there wasn't one book.
Yeah.
And it was just wonderful. It worked out great. So I guess I wrote a fairly positive review.
Yeah.
And that stuff you find was in here, which the other books, you'd get a small book, and it would just cover the main really common stuff, which we all know anyways. Mm-hmm. The ones that are harder, you wouldn't be able to do. Or then you would bring all the volume 1 to 12. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you couldn't take them out in the woods with you. You'd have to do it all at night. So, great book.
So yours is a well-worn copy, or is this your second or third copy?
This is my well-worn copy.
Very nice.
Because I haven't worked on the coast that much. I ended up being more of a boreal person.
I've found that, this is me, the most effective way to learn was to go out with someone who already knew and ask, keep asking questions, but if I was on my own, I'd take a picture, take a little piece of the plant, bring it back, and then look at it carefully. But we enlisted Lee Joseph, or Stylewat, who's a Squamish woman and an ethnobotanist, knows a lot about, you know, coastal indigenous uses of plants. And she contributed a lot. And then Jamie Fenneman, who's a younger taxonomist, botanist. He lives on Vancouver Island. So those two are in their 40s.
Yeah.
At least.
They're the young bucks. Yeah. Did you set up to write for it to be as... How many pages is it?
So just before credits. Including the glossary, 508 pages.
Well, that's the maximum. Or 520, I would say, is the maximum. I can still call it a field guide. But the thing about books are they have a certain gravitas compared to the online offerings. But nowadays you can go online and identify plants, and in the past you couldn't. Yeah. You were stuck with books.
Last thing, and because this is an audio format, if you wouldn't mind being as descriptive as possible, but what is a plant that you, when you notice it, makes you excited around here when you're walking either up in the subalpine or even just around in forests near here? What's a plant that you want to kind of shout out and have more people pay attention to?
Well, if you're on the dry ridges, I love seeing the sage buttercup. Mm-hmm. Which is a little thing that usually grows in the Okanagan, you know, or Cache Creek, or the dry interior. Mm-hmm. But it occurs on some of these dry, rocky, southwest-facing ridges with the Rocky Mountain juniper.
And then I got the full Pojar experience of identifying a plant incorrectly and getting a brief lesson on the cellular function and identifying features of a lovely little number called Sage Buttercup.
Yep. So it's got those shiny petals.
Oh, that's not dew. That's just they come out waxy like that. Like it's...
They actually have an arrangement of cells that acts like a mirror.
Oh.
And it reflects light like that.
What's the purpose of that?
Attract pollinators.
Oh.
And it's the source of buttercup, the common name, because old folklore has it that if you rub it under your chin, it'll turn your skin yellow.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Have you tried?
No, I haven't.
Want to give it a shot?
The kids have.
Yeah, for sure. Purple Mountain Saxifrage. Oh, very cool. And you can find that here?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
That picture is from Brian Boru.
Oh, okay.
The mountain up by Hazelton.
Okay. Very cool. Do we have Monkshood?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yep. But it's not a different name. It's Monkshood. It's called Monkshood.
Yep, aconitum.
Is that also belladonna?
No, but it's poisonous like belladonna.
Yeah, okay.
But it's Monkshood because I have a picture here.
Figure it out. Good thing we have such a handy field guide. Local groups like the Bulkley Valley Naturalists rely on it for their coastal trips, demonstrating its widespread appeal and utility. However, the botanical landscape has shifted in the past 30 years with the emergence of invasive species and significant changes in taxonomy due to DNA barcoding. Many outdated names have been retired, reflecting a growing cultural sensitivity and commitment to accuracy in plant identification. The guide remains a vital tool for this purpose, offering practical demonstrations on identifying plants through their characteristics such as branching patterns, stem colors, and inflorescence, which Sabil showed me. By organizing plants by family, Pojar's guide enhances pattern recognition, which makes it easier for users to navigate the diverse plant world of the Pacific Northwest. So this updated field guide not only honors its rich history, but also embraces the evolving understanding of plant biology, ensuring its relevance for generations to come.
So we're a local club that's existed in the valley since the late 70s, and it was started by Rosamond Pojar, who was one of the contributors to this book,
mm-hmm.
Related to the main author, Jim Pojar. And she started the club, and it's been going ever since. So they've changed a lot. What's happened is people used to identify plants visually, and they would look at it, right? Morphological features. And they would figure out, oh, this is closely related to that because the branching is the same. And then they could figure out the lineage of the plants, right? But now it's all done with DNA and RNA and whatever. Oh. So it's all done in the lab. Barcoding, DNA barcoding and all that. And don't ask me about that because I don't know anything about it. Very specialized work. And so what they found out is a lot of times things look the same. They aren't this closely related as they thought. So they rearrange the tables of, because with plant taxonomy, it's all based on evolution. Started out as one plant and then it diversifies over time, right? Mm-hmm. And you try to trace that back. So that's really changed. Mm-hmm. And when that changes, they have to change all the names. So that's a big one. The other thing about changing the names is things are no longer appropriate. So on our West Coast, a lot of the plants were called Indian this, Indian that. Right. Those names have been changing. And there was also a tendency to name them after just like towns and Smithers and so on, mm-hmm. on some old white guy that just happened to be the boss, and you name the plant after the person, and or you know, a botanist that you're trying to honor. So they're trying to get rid of those kind of names that are associated with some old white guy. So that's happened. That's a big change, I'm sure. And then the type of information. But changing an abundance of species, you're going to have to ask the authors about that question.
Sure.
If you take a botany course, you will learn about plant families and the hierarchy of it.
But if I haven't taken a botany course.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a whole different approach if you're not. If you just do it yourself,
yep.
And I am not a person who spends a lot of time on keys and taxonomy. I have a good visual ability to detect a difference. Oh, that just looks different,
mm-hmm.
right? But I don't really pick it apart, what it is I'm doing. I'm just getting this mental image, and I'm sure we all do that with mushrooms or whatever. You know, our brains are designed to do that, to mm-hmm. figure out what's good to eat and what's not good to eat. things like that.
The book is Plants of the Pacific Coast from Alaska to Oregon. It's a brand new, fully up-to-date plant guide by Jim Pojar, Andy McKinnon, Lee Joseph Stiawat, and Jamie Fenneman. It comes out in August and was published by a new Canadian publisher, a B.